All right. Well, Kim, welcome to the podcast. We're so grateful to have you here.
Thank you.
I know you are a new faculty member in the Department of Dance, so I would really like everyone to be introduced to you and to your mode of teaching. So I'm just going to kind of begin to begin and start. You know, I know you said you grew up in New York City.
Yes.
And I'm really curious, Kim, how is that part of your biography significant to you as a dance artist and as a teacher?
So growing up in New York City, it's part of the best parts of my life because it has shaped me to be the person I am today. As a human, you know, I'm very strong and direct and real, right, and honest. And I feel like being a New Yorker has helped me to be that. And just as a dancer, you know, being able to learn dance on my own at first at a young age and then be part of a public school system where I was able to dance throughout, you know, and then have those same teachers and mentors like guide me into my adult life as a dancer and teacher and choreographer. Being in New York City, just living in different boroughs, but also understanding that in some of the ugliness that happens in New York City, there's so much beauty and there's this beautiful chaos that happens where you are going from, you know, one spot to the next spot. You know, you get on the trains and, you know, even though the subways are like grimy and like, you know, sometimes dirty, it's like, it's this amazing thing that I can be from one borough to the next in like 30 minutes, right? So it's this fast pace, but even in the fast pace, there's just this beautiful, you know, energy that happens through it. So it's definitely shaped me as a teacher to be that, that strong teacher with my students where I'm very real and very honest with them and in their face, right? Helping to guide them any way that I can and being open, you know, and just being there for them, right? But also having that hip hop street dance in me, you know, in its original birthplace of the South Bronx, which is actually where I'm originally from, being able to experience some of that and its beginning parts of it has been a blessing to be able to see it blossom to where it is today. So New York City has a major impact on me as an artist. And I've taken a lot of that with me now here, you know, at Rutgers.
Well, you know, it's such a city of contrasts and sharp elbows. Right.
Yes.
I can imagine you're forced to be direct. So you have to grow up fast and you have to advocate for yourself, whether it's, look, I've got to get on this subway car because I need to get to school.
Yes.
Right. So I can imagine it gives you quite a bit of resilience.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about your first encounter with hip hop and dance. It sounds like eventually it was folded into your curriculum in the New York City public school system, which is incredible. But how did it make you feel? Can you talk about how that first encounter, those early encounters outside of the school system, outside of a dance studio, how did it shape or, you know, expand your conception of what dance was?
So this is funny. This is really funny because hip hop culture and hip hop culture, we'll start there, has many different sides to it. And when we talk about dance within it, there's all different styles that, you know, can be part of, that is part of the culture. And so I tell this story to my students because they don't really get it until they see the picture. But my cousin, when I was about three years old, my cousin was this black male, black gay male in New York City. And we're talking about in the early 80s. And, you know, and so he was in this position where at that time, you know, things were pretty much, you didn't talk about that, Right. And so he lived with my grandmother, and I would stay there with her. And so he was part of like the underground scene of like Vogue dance. And so he would teach me like runway walks, poses, all these different little turns. And I was three, and I was like three or four. And so I always say that that was the first time where I was able to really just move my body and just be this have this strong personality, because actually just he was like that. So I was like, I want to be like that. So that's really those beginning encounters of just moving my body, walks, and just understanding what confidence is, right? I actually learned that through him and through Vogue Dance. And although he passed away in the late 80s, I always remembered that throughout my childhood of learning hip hop dance, it wasn't really in a dance studio, right? I learned it from first I started learning Vogue dance with him, but then I learned a couple of like some breaking elements, and I learned, some popping and stuff from neighborhood people, right? But then I would watch the movie Breakin', right? And so when people talk about, this virtual learning that we're dealing with right now, I'm like, I learned pretty much sort of virtually how to dance, right? In the beginning parts of it, because growing up, hip hop wasn't in studios. Like, it's a each one teach one sort of culture where you learn from your neighbor, you learn from your friends or your family. And so that's really what it was about. My brother was a DJ, and so he did a lot of parties in the South Bronx. But also we used to have block parties, and the community center and Melrose Projects, we used to have parties there, and we used to learn how to dance there, right? So my beginning stages was really about just that confidence, right? That's what hip hop did for me. It made me confident. I didn't learn, there was no master teacher, whatever that is, whatever that means. There
Right.
was no master teacher like giving you a five, six, seven, eight. No, it wasn't about the counting at all. It was about how the music made you feel. And I remember watching the movie Breakin' for the first time, and I was in awe. I wanted to dance like that even more. So I watched that movie over and over again. And that's actually how I learned how to wave, how to arm wave and body wave and do some of those movements naturally by watching that movie, and then eventually watching videos and things like that. And it wasn't until I got actually older, like maybe late teens, early 20s, where I really started, learning under certain people, who was in the studio at that point, right?
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Part of the reason I wanted to talk to you is for exactly what you're referencing here, the idea that you weren't in the studio. So you weren't in the studio then until your teens, you're thinking, like that kind of studio culture. Because I'm very interested in, I know you have a master's degree in dance education, so you can talk about this from a lot of different angles, from the kid who was learning by watching a movie and watching family members and just absorbing what was going on outside, organic, right? An overused word, but that's what's coming to me. And you can also talk about this as a person who's educated in a formal way. Talk about the limitations in kind of your more typical dance education that you're seeing your students come out of, in who is called a dancer, what a dancer looks like, what a studio looks like. And I'm going to say this, sometimes the tyranny of the teacher, right? Movement-wise, what passes for dance? I know I'm throwing a lot of things into a bucket there, but these are just the things that are coming to me. What's that challenge?
So what happens, and what's been happening? This is not only this has been going on forever. What we tend to we don't we socialize dance, and I'm just going to be very honest. We associate dance with a certain body type,
Yep.
right? We associate dance with what ballet is, right? And I'm saying this because throughout this whole quarantine life, you're on your phone and everything, and all these things pop up about dance. And every time I see something about dance, I see like a ballerina, right? And so the misconception is dance equals ballet. Okay. And so when we think about dance, it's like I think of dance, you're moving your body, right? When you go to a party, you dance. You don't say, oh, I'm moving my body at a party. No, you're dancing. Okay. So, and then there's pockets of it, right? Or let's say there's categories of it, right? Where you dance recreationally, right? You may dance like with your family friends at a party, a family function, right? You're still dancing, right? You're still performing in some way, right? In front of your friends and family, right? And then you have like that pre-professional, right? Where you're learning all these different styles, these different techniques or movement practices, and you are basically working towards being the mover that you would like to be, or that you think is necessary for you to be that professional dancer, right? The professional dancer, I always think of, you're the person who is pretty much, you're in the field, you're booking jobs, you're making a living off this, right? There are different levels of it. And so someone who started, I didn't have my first dance class. First of all, let's go back. I wasn't that kid where I could have like be in a dance studio, every day, because we were poor. We didn't grow up with all this money. Dance is expensive,
And
okay?
the tutus and the makeup and the,
It's expensive. Like dance is, it is so expensive. To the point where you spend all this money on these costumes, you're never going to wear them again. And it's like, what are we saying here? Right. And so, yeah, I never had that. Right. And so, what I do come from is I come from a background where, Black dance culture was my first introduction, right? And we're talking about hip hop, we're talking about a little bit older West African dance, we're talking about mambo and salsa. Coming from the South Bronx, there's no way I don't know basic salsa, there's no way, right? And so we're talking about coming from a place that is that organic place, right? But how do you shift that, right, into the real world, right? So the real world, I'm just going to say it, they don't accept that, right? In the real world of dance, if you're not taking ballet or some sort of codified, technique, something that is written in the books, something where it's that Eurocentric, it's valid, right? Then you're not a dancer, right? That's what's been said all these years, right? But then you recognize, and dance also has evolved, right? We're dance is an evolving art form, right? And so what happens is someone who is taking dance, who don't have access to the classes and all of this, when they go to auditions, right? And we're talking about a high school student, when they go to audition, and you're on that ballet bar, you may not know all of that, right? But you may kill it in the improv section because you're such a beautiful mover. You understand musicality. You're creating your own way of moving that I would want to work with you, right? Because I want you to be that creative soul, right? I don't want you to be a machine or a puppet,
A
right? But
soldier. Yeah, there's a military aspect of that. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so I think that what happens is people get discouraged, right? And so just to go back in my own path, I studied Graham throughout high school, modern dance, which is Graham technique, throughout high school, right? But then my dance teacher was that dance teacher. Her name was Vivian Ullman. She said to me, you are gifted. You are gifted as a choreographer and a teacher. Like, you are working with your peers. Like, you're choreographing full length pieces at 15 on your peers. Like, that's, she pushed me in a way where there was all these possibilities for me, right? And so she was the one who made me recognize that,
How
yeah, I'm
fortunate, how
right,
fortunate that you met up with someone who saw you. I mean,
yes. She saw me before I was. She never wanted me to, she never said to me, oh, you need to go and take, ballet here. And I took, ballet throughout, but it wasn't, it was, my emphasis was on my hip hop street dance, and my Graham technique. And then she also introduced us to other things, flamenco, and, we did jazz and we did other, but her main program was a Graham program. And that technique made me a stronger dancer. But after high school, this is the kick that people like don't realize, but my undergrad is not in dance.
your undergrad is in marketing communications,
Yes,
right? You have a BS. Yeah,
it
and that's one of my questions for
is.
you.
Yeah, my undergrad is in marketing communications. After high school, I took a gap year, and at the time, gap years were not cool. It was like, what do you mean you're taking a gap year?
They
And I
weren't
was
so gappy then.
right.
They
They
didn't
weren't so.
sound
People was like, what do you mean you're taking a gap year? They're like, are you going back to school? And I'm like, yeah.
It was less British sounding then, right?
It was, I was like, I'm taking a year off. They're like, what do you mean you're taking a year off? And but my mom always supported me, and so did my mentor. And I always had a plan, right? So the plan was, in this year, I'm going to dance, I'm going to create, I'm going to teach at my old high school, which I just graduated from. And I'm gonna work, and I'm gonna figure out exactly what I want to do. I got into Marymount Manhattan College, but it was expensive, and I was like, "We don't have money like that, so I need to go someplace that I can still dance." And what I recognize is that other schools, if you're not in a dance program, right? And I'm just gonna say this: if you're not a BFA at that time, it's different now. If you're not in a BFA program, right? You are in a dance program, but you don't get all these certain, I'll say, perks that the BFA students get, right? And so I kind of was like, yeah, I don't know if I want a degree in dance. I feel like for what I'm doing, I want to focus on hip hop street dance, and jazz dance. That's not really being offered in these schools. It's a ballet modern program, and that's not what I want to highlight. Now, do I love it? Of course I do. I'm a dancer. I love all dance, but I wanted to focus on something particular that was not being offered in universities at all. Like, it was almost like a joke for you to even be fancy
Kim,
like
what gave you that confidence at that age? Because a lot of people are told no along the way, right? You hear
Yes.
story after story of people being told no, or that's not quite for you, honey, or whatever it is. Sometimes the no's
Right.
are cloaked in real concern. And plenty of people would say, well, they know better. What gave you the confidence to keep saying, I am holding on to hip hop, to street dance. This matters.
You know what it was? Because I didn't want to be like anybody else. I didn't want to be what every first thing, I didn't want to be what everyone, I didn't want to do what everyone else was doing, because I knew a lot of people who was doing that, and they were not getting hired. They were not, like, they were, you were putting yourself through all of this. And my end goal was, I need a job. Like, I need to be able to be in this position, or be able to, like, pretty much, I need to be able to take care of myself, right? And at that time, it was a little rough, right? Because you didn't have a lot of the contemporary companies that are out now doing their thing, right? You didn't have these hip hop companies out now, right? So at that moment, I didn't want to put myself through something for other people, right? It was like, this is how I want to move. So I made a decision. I said, well, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to have this dance background, I got to have a business degree. I was like, because I need to be able, at some point, if I decide to open up my own whatever, I need to be smart enough. I need to be that artist who is very business savvy, who understands what is necessary, and not have people do it for you, but have people collaboratively do it with you. And so I, that confidence definitely comes from me being a street dancer. It definitely, because being a hip hop street dancer, it's not about being anyone else. It's about having the freedom of being yourself. It's about that individuality. And that's what I felt was missing when I was seeing all my dance friends or people that I had danced with. You were trying to be molded into something that's not you. And I don't come from that, right? Where I come from, I'll say this, coming from the South Bronx, coming from, Harlem, you got to be real. You got to be who you are. And so if I'm trying to be something that I'm not, it's not going to come across well, right? And so I made a hard decision. It was like, I'm not going to go to undergrad for dance, but I'm still going to dance. So I did. I danced Temporary Dance Center, Steps, on Broadway, my jazz class. Oh my gosh, the late Frank Hatchett. When I met him and learned, and started taking his classes, I was like, oh, I'm living right now, right? Because I was making all these connections to jazz dance, to hip hop and street dance, and just really understanding that this is what I want to do, right? It wasn't until I was about 24 when I decided to start like my first dance company, and it was all under what I wanted to do. And so for me, I will always say that you have to be who you need to be. Like, you have to be you in this field, because if not, you start looking at like the next person and then you don't get noticed, and that's what I will say. That's where I got my confidence from, through hip hop street dance.
Well, and it seems to me that you are relentlessly practical, right?
Yes.
So, I want to make sure, because I know you've been alluding to the fact that where you come from forces you to be yourself fully and forces you to be confident. I think people are going to make certain assumptions about that. And so I want you to talk about what that required coming from, and I know you said you lived in different boroughs, coming from the neighborhoods you did in the city, having to, and I'm making an assumption here, but having to grow up fast in certain ways. What is it about? Talk a little bit about that. Yes, there's the community, the neighborhood that formed you. How did it inform you?
So growing up, so I grew up in the South Bronx at a time where, it was a lot of poverty. It was a lot of gangs happening. My grandmother lived in Melrose Projects. That's where we stayed, because my mom was working. And so I was in between there, and I was in between like another, well, not that far away from there. But then we moved to like Brooklyn, which was another area. It wasn't as much as poverty in the South Bronx as the South Bronx. But, it was another place where, there was crime, right? And then we moved to Harlem. Moved to Harlem, we're talking in the late 80s, right? Where it's totally different than what it is today. But still some of that is there, right? So I grew up in an environment where, you always had to, you had to watch your back, right? You had to make sure that you were making the right decisions. And that you were not getting into things, and some of my friends did, and I made better choices for myself.
Kim, I'm going to interrupt you for one second, and I'm sorry, but I want to make sure I don't lose the thread of this. You know how you're saying you have to watch your back, right? So that's a very specific defensive position you have to be in if you're in a place of crime, especially as a young woman. So how do you, I guess what I'm asking is, how do you marry having to be on the defensive as a young woman in your neighborhood, walking to school, like just things that a lot of people take for granted, and being vulnerable by being yourself completely in dance and being natural? Because I'm just trying to figure out how do you marry the two, right? In your neighborhood, having to be defensive and yet totally be yourself to be respected. It's mind-boggling.
So that's why I feel like starting as a hip hop street dancer was awesome because of the root of hip hop culture, coming from a place of people feeling, people of color feeling oppressed and feeling like, no one's listening to them, this beautiful culture emerged, right? And so I'm actually really grateful that I started in that because that culture cultivated me to be this strong being, but also there's that vulnerability, right? There's that vulnerability of not knowing, what's going to happen next, right? My family has always been supportive of me, so I've always had that backing, right? But in your communities, where hip hop is, that's where it's formed, right? There's some things that happen, right? There's all these little whether it's crime or fights or whatever, within that there is vulnerability, right? Because you feel it. You feel every time someone, gets murdered, or you feel it every time you see someone get locked up, or you feel it when you're in school and one of your peers, was killed, right? Like you feel that, right? And so through that, I use dance as a vehicle to just get through it, right? That was my people write, people, do all these things. I dance. That was my outlet to absorb what was happening around me and get through it. And that's what made me so focused, right? Dance was my focus. And so it allowed me to stay on a path where, like, literally, this is what I was built to do for the rest of my life, if that makes any sense.
No, that's your lens through which you see life and cope. I
Yes.
really appreciate you digging deep and talking about that because I think it's important. And it kind of goes into my next question is which is, what do you say to a parent who is reluctant to allow their child to study dance or dance education? There are a lot of people that are afraid, understandably. We're at an especially vulnerable time in our economy. And,
Yes.
there's a sense that the arts are frippery sometimes. So
Right.
that it has not been frippery in your life. It has been
No.
a source of salvation, if I'm not being too dramatic.
You're correct.
Right?
So I hear what you're saying, and it's true because it's something I actually had to question, right? Like my mom has always supported me, so I never had that moment with my family where it was like, oh, well, you're not gonna dance, right? And a part is because I'm a strong individual, so if you're gonna say I can't do something, you gotta prove and tell me why. Like you can't just tell me no. So I think that's also part of, I've always been independent. So what I will say is that I had my own questions about that. So I dig a little deeper myself, right? And I just, spoke to my mom about it, and she just always supported me. But one thing that I'm sorry, my advisor told me at FIT, her name was Tor Orange. And I always remembered what she said. And this had nothing to do with dance. I was in this undergrad program in marketing communication, mostly fashion-based, but I knew I didn't want to be in the fashion industry. But I loved being around all these creative people at FIT. So one thing she said to me, and I literally take this everywhere in all aspects of my life. She said to me, if you love what you do, the money will follow. She said that to me when I was probably in my third year of college. She was like, do what you love and the money will follow. And I didn't understand. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, girl, you don't even understand.
Right,
No, I
that's
want to
cute,
dance. I
but
want to dance. Like, I know I love business. I'm like, but I want to dance. I was like, this is not, I don't know what you're talking about. And at that moment, I was like, okay, what does she even mean by that? So In my own research, right, it was like, okay, well, what happens in the dance world? What can you be? So I went back to speaking to my mentor, right? And I remember she's a dance teacher, right? Like, now I didn't even think about that path because, I just didn't. But I'm like, she's a dance teacher. Then it's like, well, you could be a choreographer, or you could be an arts administrator, or you can be a creative director, and all this stuff. I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, what can you do in a dance world, right? But when I've had parents come up to me and say that, right, I literally had to ask them, well, why are you concerned? First, tell me why you don't want your child to be a dancer. And then we start from there, right? And the why is always, well, there's no career in it, right? And then when I have to share with them that,
This is
I mean,
not a volunteer job, Bethany, folks. Yeah.
no, it's not a volunteer job, but then I have to share with them and say, and I can say this to you on this line. I have to say to them, yeah, but I make six figures. They look at me like, but you're a public school teacher. I'm like, yeah, but that's not the only thing I do. And the reason why I do all the things that I do is actually, I'm not driven by money, actually. I'm doing it because I love creating. I love working with kids. I love working with, college students. I love doing all of this, right? And the money is just gonna follow, right? Because I am pushing myself to something that I love to do, and I'm making it work. And so I actually have to tell my story. So I just, one of my students, she got into purchase, right? She's been with me for 4 years, and she's taking dance other places. When I at the Beacon School, she's starting purchase this year, and it was a conversation that she said to me. Her mom was like, she doesn't know. I think I'm going to study psychology, and I said, well, no. I was like, you can minor in that, but you're a dancer. And you're a teacher, and you're gifted. No, you're gifted. So let me talk to mom. And I spoke to her mom, and the fact that her mom could see me coming, and I don't even have half, I'm gonna be honest, half the training this girl had at 18. This young lady is brilliant. She is a beautiful dancer, and she's been training, since she was like eight, but I didn't have that. So I'm like, yeah, it's all about the decisions you make. It's about the decisions that you make, right? And the paths that you take, and the networking that you do to get you to the next level, right? And that's what I will say. You can't focus on what will not be, right? You have to focus on what you can do. And once you go start there, then you build, right? You build, whether you build your own brand, you build your own brand, you work, with someone else, but you can't not try it. You just can't. And that was a double name, but it's like, you
Oh,
can't just be like, you can't just like, oh my gosh, I'm not gonna do this. No, you have to at least try, because it's gonna eat at you, and you're gonna have regrets. And who wants to live like that? So it's a speech. It's a
you're
speech.
convincing. You're convincing. This makes me, this kind of goes full circle in thinking about. I think about how fortunate you've been to have people, as I said, who have seen you. And you also, but you've also latched on to that, and you've been hungry to
Yes.
learn. How important is it for you now that you are in the position to see a student, to be the seer? What's
Yes.
that like? Because I get the sense it's important to you to be the seer.
Yes, it really is. It's something that I've recognized in myself. I didn't think, I'm going to be very honest with you. When I went to NYU to get my master's in dance education, I really loved and wanted to keep focusing on working with teenagers because I wanted to continue to build a place for students who could not get in a performing arts school but still have some sort of quality dance education. I'm actually, and I actually will say this on record, I'm actually anti-performing arts schools.
I love it.
People always say to me, like when I was in grad school, everybody wanted to work in a performing arts school. And I said, well, you don't really want to teach. Because this is my thought. You know, we have some people, you only want to work with the advanced kids. You only want to work with the kids, you know, who has this perfect turnout, you know, because it's really not about them. It's about you. You know, you're a dancer. You, and I'm just going to be very blunt because that's just the New Yorker in me. You're a dancer. You didn't make it to where you wanted to. So you're choosing teaching because you think it's a backup. I don't think teaching is a backup. I don't see it as a backup. I think that if you want to teach, like, you need to teach, right? And sometimes, you know, even working with advanced dancers, you know, I think it's great. But I specialize in working with beginners because I think that is where the disconnect is, right? Beginner dancers, many of them want to dance. They just don't have access. Like, I didn't have access, right, growing up. So how do you deny a student as a college professor or someone who is auditioning students to get into your school? How do you let student one in who has all this dance training, mom and dad got all this money to put them in, but you don't recognize student two because they don't have access to it? Right? How do you even make that decision? Right? So I always feel like I actually didn't even see myself in higher ed until maybe about 5 years ago. 5 years ago was when, I mean, I was always doing hip hop, you know, in higher ed and being an adjunct faculty member, but it wasn't until I recognized that there's a disconnect. There's a disconnect in a lot of dance programs around the country. You know, we're accepting who we want to accept to, you know, to fuel our egos, right? But what about the student? What does the student need, right? How do we cater to students who want to dance, but they didn't have access to it? So how do we do that, right? And why do we fault them, and why do we make it their fault that they don't have access because their mom and dad don't have money? No. So it was about 5 years ago that I said, I need to be on another level. I need to be on the level where I help universities recognize that dance is not ballet.
Well, I love that. And I wonder, what is it that drew you to Rutgers and to be in higher ed, and what is feeding you here, and what are you hoping to bring to Rutgers?
I am very excited about being at Rutgers because we have opened the door to recognize that dance is beyond this Eurocentric, you know, sort of what we think it is, right? I feel like if you're going to hire, you know, a person whose scholarship is in hip hop street dance, then that means that you're recognizing it, you're acknowledging it as this on the same level as the other dance form that's been on the highest form all these years, right? And so
the halls of power.
right. And yeah, it's great because to be able to, my whole platform for 20 years, my whole platform has been inclusion and diversity, right? It's always been, how do you create the whole student, right? And I want students to be diverse like myself. Yeah, I have hip hop and street dance in me, but I also have other genres, techniques in me, right? And all these other movement practices in me. And that's something that I want other students to be able to have, right? Because I want them to be able to choreograph and create and not be who everyone else is telling them to be, but be themselves, right? And so that's what I love about Rutgers. Mason Gross, I feel like we are that, right? We want students to be these independent thinking artist. And I think that is crucial, especially now in the times we are in right now. We have to be that.
Well, and I wonder, you know, coming into, as I was saying, the halls of power, right? So coming into the institution, How do you resist becoming, you know, yes, you're part of the institution, but not becoming the institution, mm-hmm. and allowing you to affect the institution? You know, how do you do that dance, Kim?
I definitely think that part of that, so it's something I said when we talked about the beginning, that realness and that direct, just being that honest, open person really contributes to how I teach and how I am as a faculty member. I've never been the person to play the game, right? I've never been the person to not challenge people to go beyond what we're doing, right? And so I think that that has always worked for me. And I'm grateful that Mason Gross, they've recognized that, and they want that. You know, not many people want, you know, not many people want something that's that real in your face. And I am very grateful that Mason Gross wants that, right? They do want, you know, something different, or they do want, you know, to enhance, right? And to be part of that, it's an honor. To be part of that is you know, you got this girl from the South Bronx who learned hip hop street dance in her recreational centers, to being able to just teach it in that state, but still on a higher level, it is an honor. It's a blessing to be able to do that. And especially when people along the way said it wouldn't happen, right? Or that, you know, it's not a real dance form. You know, it doesn't have like any real vocabulary, you know? So I'm definitely in a place where I will never be the institution. It's not in my DNA to, but it is always in my DNA to contribute and to move the institution forward, because that's what hip hop is, right? My love for hip hop is, it's a way of living, right? It's not me knowing a few cool moves and be like, I'm a hip hop street dancer and choreographer. No, hip hop is a way of living. And I have lived my entire life through the roots of it and through what it represents. And that is exactly how I'm able to be who I am today to the students at Rutgers and to this amazing faculty that we do have.
Well, that is a perfect note to end on. Thank you. And thank you for infusing Mason Gross with your own history and who you are. We're very lucky to have you, Kim.
Thank you so much.